simply by recognizing that marginal land type uses and a multiplicity of other food, feed, fiber, and forage operations are legitimate agricultural uses in EFU zones and remove the prejudice against those uses that exists in current law. LCDC recognizes the importance of these uses to agriculture in its Goal 3 administrative rule. A perusal of case law, however, indicates that these uses are extremely difficult to establish in practice and that the present interpretation of Goal 3 is geared largely to the benefit of established and conventional larger full-time farms and farming corporations. We believe that this is the inflexible application of Goal 3 that is referred to by the task force. Unfortunately, SB 237, as now written, offers only the illusion of flexibility. Thank you.
Questions?
Mr. Chair? The chair of the task force that you refer to disagrees with your opinion. It was my understanding that he appeared before the Senate Environment and Energy Committee and endorsed the concept and thought that that did meet the concern of the task force. Would you like to straighten out what appears to be a discrepancy between your interpretation of the task force recommendation and the chairman's interpretation?
Well, I believe that everybody practically is in agreement that some sort of marginal lands type bill must be worked out in order to provide additional flexibility. I think that perhaps the chairman of that committee, Stafford Hansel, was supporting the concept. My concern as a county governor or a county official who is going to have to be in the trenches implementing this bill is that the standards that we are provided with here are so arbitrary and difficult for us to administer that what's actually going to happen is very little of this land will ever be found, even if it is legitimately large marginal land based on productivity. And so this is perhaps the key disagreement we have with this bill.
Not sure that answered the question, but
I would have to know precisely what Mr. Hansel was commenting on before I could really make an intelligent response to that. I think that we both would favor a marginal lands concept, and we certainly do. But in terms of looking at it from a county standpoint, who is going to have to apply this, we feel that the standard that's in there now is going to present an awful lot of problems for us.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Gilbert Shad.
Ladies and gentlemen, members of the committee, being quite busy farming on the one hand and defending the right to farm on the other, I don't have everything written out and printed, so I can give you a copy, but...
Gilbert, would you give us your name just for the record, please?
Yes, sir. It's Gilbert T. Shad, 24270 Northeast Airport Road, Aurora.
Thank you.
Right in the midst of the best land in Clackamas County, what little there is left of it. And... land like this is not found anywhere else in the state of this quality, because we have 500 feet down, we have hot water, and that does affect the climate in that area. Unless we get a real strong east wind, we do not get frosts when the surrounding country does. And this type of land should always be kept for specialty crops and production, which, I mean, there's no factory making this land, and it's running out. That's my concern. Is in this EFU zone, in the past year and a half, three commercial businesses have built or added to existing buildings and have set up shop without permits for building or business. How this is allowed, I do not understand. In regard to these businesses, is a commercial cabinet shop, an automobile body and paint shop, and a roofing business. They start in by building, saying that it's a farm building, and before it is finished, the business moves in and starts taking over. The Planning Commission gets a phone call with questions asked, and nothing happens. And I think there needs to be more protection for exclusive farm use zones. Of course, I'm considering the Willamette Valley. I'm not so well acquainted with Eastern Oregon, but in the valley where this prime land is, we need to protect it to keep it there without all these nuisances moving in, because as soon as they are in, it's like the gentleman from Hood River maintains, they buy the land because they like to see the cows in the field, and then as soon as they live there, they realize that The occasionally, the turkeys and cows, they form a scent that drifts across, and bingo, they're opposed to everything. And once they're there, you have this to contend with. One of the largest farms in my neighborhood, 100 acres, it's a century farm, it's been in the family for ever since the beginning. They cannot grow crops that require spraying or dusting because Charbonneau has been built within 15 feet of their property line. And house against house, it makes a solid row like a city street. And they cannot raise crops anymore that require any spraying or dusting. And I mean, something is wrong in this procedure. Just what it is, I can't answer all the legal questions. But it seems that the leading industry in the state is agriculture, and yet someone in the state, the governor and the mayors and various people run around the world hunting for businesses to come and locate here. And the first thing they do when they locate, they want a piece of the best farm there is to locate on. Now, these farmers do not send their manufacturing process overseas and bring the product back. They make it right here. And I don't understand why we promote things that destroy what is now our best. If someone could tell me, I would appreciate it. And one of the things that happens in the county I live in is Clackamas, for instance. They approve or allow so many things that are not allowed according to any rule in the LCZs, in the exclusive farm use zones. Like on July 29th in 82, the board approved a new 2-acre parcel from a 21.6-acre tract as a non-farm dwelling. The board is supposed to find that the land is unsuitable. Well, unsuitable for agriculture because it has not been farmed. The operator was unsuitable, not the land. And too often they use this in this county for an excuse. I know this roofing business that started within the side of my house, it's an awful-looking mess, and I was at the hearing when he applied for a conditional permit to park private vehicles in the corner of his lot, which was totally a 10-acre piece. Now this half-acre is cut away, and the rest is for sale, which means subdivision. Now, while this hearing was going on, he was moving his roofing business in. Now, his permit allows parking private vehicles, but it does not allow a roofing business with tar pots and vast piles of pallets and dump boxes, and I mean, it looks like Zidel's gone to hell. Really, and it's awful. And he is proceeding, and they have called into the county to ask why, and nothing happens. Who do you have to call? Who is supposed to see that the rules are followed in this county? Now, another deal in Clackamas County, early in 82, Clackamas County approved the division of a 24-acre parcel into an 8 and a 16-acre parcel. The property is excellent farm ground, mostly class 1 and 2. This area is given almost entirely to commercial agriculture on larger tracts, yet without making any findings that the new small parcels are appropriate for commercial agriculture in the area, the county broke the tract down into two parcels. Now, this county is famous for that. There's one deal which was taken all the way to Supreme Court to prevent its subdivision. They reapplied a year later, and when the hearing was held, everyone that might be opposed was requested to leave because the parcels they owned or the tax lot they owned was not large enough to give them a vote. So the votes were in favor of this parcelization, which is on the opposite side of this 100-acre farm, which I just referred to a moment ago. And then we find that on record was a letter thanking the commissioners for this change in zoning. And this letter was on record even before the hearing was held. So in order to make the deal stick, the people who might have been opposed to it were asked to leave the hearing. Well, how do we answer this kind of a situation? These are the things that concern me in this exclusive farm use district. It is one of the best in the state and deserves some of the best protection. And yet, even though the protection is on the books, nothing happens. And I would like to have some of you tell me what can be done, if anything.
Gilbert, I think you'll find that this bill is going to go a long way toward protecting true farmland in those good soil classifications. On the other hand, I see you signed up, you're both for and against the bill, so I guess you must assume that there is some marginal land out there somewhere. That's where we ought to be addressing the problem. So I think that is true. I think you can ask some of the longtime Willamette Valley farmers around here that who helped draft this bill, that it does give some protection to the farmers as well as answering some of the concerns of the Prop 6 people who have been complaining. So I guess that's the best answer I can give you.
Well, I'm hoping that's the part I'm in favor of, is all that protection. But a few of the doubts I have there was, for instance, in the Willamette Valley and in adjoining areas, some of this land, which some of them, they get a conditional use permit because it will not produce, when actually this land, although it's marginal under the surface, it grows the finest grapes there are. And grapes are becoming a fine industry in Oregon. So actual marginal land, as far as production goes, is only the operator, not the land, in the valley floor, in my opinion. And I thank you for all the consideration you can give to this.
Thank you, Gilbert.
Thank you.
Debbie Weaver? Yeah, I'll get Lois.
I'll get you.
Good evening. I'm Deborah Weaver, Chairman of the Land Use and Environment Legislative Subcommittee of the Oregon Association of Realtors, and I'm speaking to you tonight in that capacity on behalf of the State Association. Our association agrees with Senator Kitzhaber that this bill is considerably different from that which was originally introduced. We appreciate the difference in the fact that the bill has been shortened. We believe that the concept of marginal lands may be a good one. However, we are concerned with problems readily identifiable in this bill. In the marginal land sections, we believe that the definition has not been carefully thought out and consideration given to the difficulty, if not impossibility, of administration. It does not retain the necessary flexibility to be applicable to all areas and circumstances existing in the entire state. The problems are as follows. Number one, on page 2, lines 1 through 3 of your draft, the arbitrary income standard will require an individual to open up their confidential income records to county officials and then would require that someone, presumably a county official, determine whether the parcel of land made a significant contribution to the farm operation. Since significant contribution is a judgmental factor, this opinion could be subject to appeal by anyone who does not agree. Number 2, on page 2, lines 9 through 14 of your draft, the Senate committee heard considerable testimony regarding the soil capability tests. It was evident that an area of land composed predominantly of soils class 5 through 8 and not capable of producing 85 cubic feet of timber per acre per year would be of such poor capability that it could not sustain an intensive farm or forest operation or meet requirements for septic suitability for a dwelling. A forester has indicated that land that will produce less than 95 cubic feet per acre per year, if such land existed anywhere in western Oregon, would be in swamp areas or rock outcroppings. Number 3, on page 2, lines 5 through 8 of your draft, the definition requires that marginal land be an attracted area of which 50% is composed of contiguous ownerships 20 acres or less in size. We believe that this will create an administrative problem for local governments in sorting out contiguous ownerships based on total size of ownership, not tax lot, to determine qualification for the marginal land study area of not less than 100 acres. This area, of course, will change as ownership changes. Selecting the appropriate 100 acres to be included in the area is a judgmental factor which will be subject to appeal. There is an inconsistency with requiring that the marginal land parcel be an attracted area of ownerships 20 acres or less in size, yet one needs 20 acres or more to qualify for a dwelling on marginal lands. Number 4, on page 2, lines 22 of your draft, other than a lot of record, the bill establishes a 20-acre minimum lot size for a dwelling or any lot to be created for a dwelling on marginal land. It seems inappropriate to require the same standard for marginal land as that which has been used for prime agricultural lands. Legislatively requiring the 20-acre minimum size on a statewide basis does not allow local governments to recognize the widely diverse agricultural activities applicable to a given area. For the lot of records section of the bill, page, the bottom of page 3 and the top of page 4, it is our understanding that the purpose of the lot of record is to legislatively establish the right to build a dwelling on a parcel of land. We believe that that right should run with the land, not with the owner. Attaching specific dates to a lot of record is inappropriate. If the parcel was legally created, it should make no difference when it was acquired or by whom. If the 1978 date is retained in this bill, then the parcels which were created most recently and which have met the most stringent standards would not qualify as lots of record. The contiguous lots requirement is discriminatory against family ownerships while recognizing all other ownerships and should be dropped. This requirement works against the family whose members wish to live or own property near one another while retaining autonomy through individual ownerships. Requiring additional findings, notice, and hearings to qualify for a lot of record in the EFU zone is inconsistent with the legislative right provided. Establishing a 2-acre maximum for a lot of record in an EFU zone appears inconsistent with standards already developed, which recognizes a 20-acre minimum lot size for prime agricultural lands. In the EFU sections, land zoned EFU already have the most restrictive requirements set in state law and in the Agricultural Lands Administrative Rule adopted by LCDC. The Land Use Task Force last year heard continual requests from every area of the state for less restriction and more flexibility. The problems in this bill are, number one, and on your draft it would be page 7, line 4, the bill will legislatively establish a 20-acre minimum lot size. Comprehensive plans have already been acknowledged with a minimum other than 20 acres or without a minimum, allowing local governments to establish the lot size on a case-by-case basis.
Mr. Chair?
Everything true?
May I interrupt just for a moment before you continue? The basic thrust of the bill seems to be in EFU lands where the prime agricultural lands are to try to tighten up the criteria there a little bit, but take the marginal lands and try to loosen the criteria there to allow more development. You don't agree with that basic thrust? You think EFU ought to be loosened as well as marginal lands?
I think I will have answered this question if I may continue with my testimony. Number 2 applies to page 7, lines 5 through 7 in your draft. The bill requires county government to obtain personal confidential income information of farm and woodlot owners and then analyze every income record to determine the gross and from what source it was derived in order to determine the average farm or woodlot in the county. We do not believe that most owners will allow an invasion of their personal income records and that this standard therefore imposes an impossible administrative burden on local government. Number 3, page 7, line 12 through 5. The bill requires an individual to make a substantial investment prior to being allowed to live on his property. Operations that would create the income required are usually those which make it imperative to live on the property. For instance, rabbits, chickens, or any operation requiring constant management. Even Christmas trees during the first 6 years will be assured less damage from deer and vandalism if someone lives on the property. Number 4 on page 7, lines 12 through 5. The bill establishes an arbitrary income standard to be sustained for 2 years prior to being allowed a dwelling. Income standards have nothing to do with productivity, and LCDC has already ruled out that test as a standard for productivity. We are wondering, too, how local governments are to determine the annual growth from trees that may not derive an income for 20 to 60 years. Number 5, page 9, lines 3 through 28, dwellings not in conjunction with farm use are allowed only on the poorest soils where septic approval probably is not possible. We notice, too, that the required findings have been changed, which will probably take years of litigation to master and make workable. Number 6, on page 12, section 7, the bill requires minor land partitions to meet the same restrictive standards of major partitions or subdivisions. This will place an unnecessary administrative and financial burden on local governments and property owners. Number 7, on page 7, lines 21 through 25, private parks, playgrounds, hunting and fishing preserves, and campgrounds have been deleted while allowing government-owned facilities. We do not object to adding government-owned facilities. However, we do object to deleting privately held facilities, which are usually better maintained and better managed than government property. Number 8, on this would be page 8, lines 16 through 25 of your draft. No changes have been proposed for Section 5, subparagraph 2J, which allows as a conditional use a temporary facility for processing forest products grown on the same land or contiguous land. The substantial investment necessary for such a facility cannot be justified on a temporary basis. Therefore, we would recommend that this committee consider changing this paragraph to read as follows. A facility for the primary processing of forest products, provided that such facility is found to not seriously interfere with accepted farming practices and is compatible with farm uses described in ORS 215.203 sub 2. The primary processing of a forest product as used in this section means the use of a portable chipper or stud mill or other similar methods of initial treatment of a forest product in order to enable its shipment to market. This would allow the facility as a conditional use, but would still be subject to review and any additional regulations deemed appropriate at the local level. Senate Bill 237 appears to legislatively distinguish between small, labor-intensive farm operations and larger operations. However, we do not believe that the smaller farming operations should be required to sustain their operations on the poorest soils, in tracted areas, and subject to standards and conditions that have nothing to do with productivity. Only 44% of the farmers in Oregon indicate that farming is their principal occupation, and only 25% make more than $20,000 from agricultural products. This legislation appears to be placing excessively restrictive standards on the majority of the farmers in the state simply because they farm on a part-time, smaller basis. A campaign promise last November was that the legislature would reform and fix the land use system and that more flexibility would be incorporated into the already too restrictive process. Our association feels that the minimum that you can do with this version of Senate Bill 237 as a step toward those promises would be to, number one, provide for more flexibility in the EFU zone, which would recognize and allow for farming activity which is reflective of our diverse agricultural community, both large and small, and number two, adopt a workable lot of record provision that would recognize legally created parcels and which would not discriminate against family ownerships of contiguous parcels.
Chairman.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I got a direct response to that question here. I think it was probably yes, especially with your summary comment there. But should I conclude from your testimony that you think the basic philosophy in this bill, which is to tighten up the standards in EFU zone, which is the most productive agricultural land, and to loosen standards in on marginal lands is a flawed concept?
We agree with the marginal lands concept. However, we feel that as it is drafted in this bill, that is totally unworkable from an administrative standpoint. And therefore, we think that a step towards solving the problem would be to allow for diversity in the EFU zone and recognize the fact that we do have a diverse agricultural economy in Oregon, that we do have small operations as well as large operations, and provide for the use and ability of those operations in the EFU zone. We also think that if the lot of record provision was broadened, that some of these smaller operations could then occur on smaller lots of records that exist.
So I guess trying to drive home to that question a little more, you agree with half of it, which says loosen up the marginal lands, but you don't agree with the part that would then tighten up the most productive agricultural lands. In fact, you'd like to loosen them up like the marginal lands.
I believe that smaller farming operations really realistically require probably the same conditions, usually the same conditions and the same soils as your smaller operations. And basically, as I see the way that this bill is going, what you're saying is let's put the smaller farming operations on less productive land, and they need the same kind of conditions and the same land as your larger operations.
Some of the agriculturalists that have testified this evening that are working operations that are in EFU zones indicated that this parcelization of that prime agricultural land diminishes their ability to make a reasonable living off that land and continue to have a sound agricultural operation. Do you think there's merit to that argument, or do you think those statements that were made by a number of the people who are actually those farmers that we're talking about were really erroneous?
I recognize that there is certainly a difference of philosophy as far as land use in this state. I have heard some of our largest farmers, as far as commercial type farmers in this state, indicate that there's no problem also, that they can get along with their neighbors if they're allowed to do so.
Representative Traer.
Maybe comments I think are really quite interesting. They're fairly general, however. Would it be possible to ask you to come back with some specific recommendations of what we should do with this bill from your point of view in a way of amendments or at least suggestions on you've told us what's wrong. Now tell us what we need to do to correct that.
Yes.
From your viewpoint at least.
I understand from what I've heard tonight that obviously you are going to try to make this vehicle work, and I would appreciate the opportunity for our association to submit some proposed amendments, if that would be all right.
I would appreciate it, just, Mr. Chairman, to not that we may buy all of them, but at least to understand a little better in the concept of page by page and line by line what you think should be changed.
Okay. Thank you. We'll do that.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, David. Lois Kanegi.
My name is Lois Kanegi from Corvallis, Oregon. I am with Agriculture for Oregon. My apologies. I like to come to a hearing refreshed and thinking clearly, and we are in the middle of one of the most difficult at the beginning, but actually right in the middle of one of the most difficult strawberry seasons that we've had in many years, and I'm apologetic for maybe being tireder than I should be at this moment. Thank you for allowing me to speak tonight, because I certainly cannot come back on Friday afternoon unless we are really rained out. I would like to draw your minds back to a hearing that you held several months ago, and unfortunately I did not have time to research the exact date, but I would guess it was late March or early April, at the beginning of your hearings on House Bill 2295. And by the way, I would like to congratulate you for having worked so carefully and so well in coming to consensus on 2295. At that particular time, a group of farmers, you were talking about general concerns, and there were farmers here who at that time of year were able to come, who spoke very clearly about their concerns. They were concerns that were reiterated this evening by people such as Gilbert Schaud and Bill Strader and Mike McCarthy and our friend from Multnomah County, who talked about small farms and operations. One of the things I would like to suggest that it's important to keep in mind is whether you ask the Association of Realtors for their recommendations on what kind of problems agriculture has, or whether you ask Oregon Farm Bureau or Agriculture for Oregon. One of the questions you have heard talked about continually was, and certainly in the Senate hearings it came up, and I'm sure you're going to be hearing it further, is that certainly the legislature should not be looking at marginal lands. LCDC should perhaps do this. I would like to take you back just briefly to the comments Hector McPherson made on your last hearing when he talked about the process that Agriculture for Oregon used to arrive at the initial draft the Senate committee began with. It was a group of farmers and agriculturalists, ranchers from about 9 counties in the state, including people like Bill Strader from Douglas County, and with telephone consultation frequently with people like Floyd Hawkins in Malheur County. There was a wide variety of types of agriculture that was involved. There was consultation, for instance, in Benton County with several very, very small farmers who might be making I can think of one neighboring farmer to our operation who is doing a very intensive operation on less than 10 acres. There was discussion and review with many, many farmers on what kind of things would, in the long term, protect Oregon's land use laws and agricultural land protection in such a way, if we could loosen up, but tighten. And you see, this is the bill that...